Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Grizz Weekly Grind, part of Phillies the Basketball Podcast Network. I'm Pete Pranica, TV voice of the Memphis Grizzlies and your host for the program. This is episode 38 of season 2. We are into the NBA postseason, and everybody has played their game ones, including the Memphis Grizzlies, who dropped game one on the home court to the Minnesota Timberwolves. We'll talk about that, and that was the week that was. Also, got some Petey's points. We'll talk about the game ones around the NBA. Also, give you my votes for the NBA awards now that we know that the finalists have been identified. And we'll wrap up the show with a friend of the program. Actually, we go across enemy lines and we visit with Kyle Radke, the host of 10,000 Layups podcast. That's the Minnesota Timberwolves podcast here on the Basketball Podcast Network. Sorry for the voice quality, a little bit of congestion with all the allergies and pollen going around here in Memphis. So thanks for sticking with me as we tell you that today's show is being brought to you, as always, by the Hoop City Basketball Club. Since 2005, their mission has been to assist young student-athletes in grades 1 through 12 in developing a strong work ethic with discipline, responsibility, and accountability. They've helped young men be great on the court and in the community. Their alumni include major college and NBA players. Now, if you'd like more information on how your child can become part of this great sports and character-building club, log on to HoopCityBC.com, and you can follow them on Twitter at HoopCityBC. As they say, it's in our blood. It's who we are in Hoop City. All right, let's get to That Was the Week That Was. So game one, Grizzlies and Timberwolves. Timberwolves coming off a pulsating fourth quarter rally to take out, well, not to take out. They sent the Los Angeles Clippers into another play-in game, which the Clippers ended up losing to the New Orleans Pelicans. But Minnesota punching their ticket into the postseason party as a 7th seed with a come-from-behind victory over the Los Angeles Clippers at Target Center. A lot of celebrating by the Timberwolves. Look, totally get it. They hadn't been in the playoffs in a few years. They feel really good about themselves. Since January 1, they have been the best offensive team in the NBA. Came in with a tremendous amount of confidence off that win over the Clippers. Anthony Edwards had a 30-point game against the Clippers, and even though Karl-Anthony Towns fouled out in about 24 minutes and was really not a factor in this game, Minnesota got the win. So they come into Memphis. A lot of hype, obviously, about the Grizzlies. Second best record in the NBA. Only the third time they had hosted a game one in franchise history. And for the second time, Grizzlies not able to protect the home floor. Minnesota got off to a great start. And understand that Anthony Edwards is a rhythm player. He makes his first couple shots, could have a big night. Well, 13 first quarter points, 5 of 7 from the floor, and Minnesota shoots 53% in the first quarter. Grizzlies shot 50%, but the problem is Minnesota made 5 threes in the first quarter. Grizzlies only 1. Grizzlies got to the free throw line 12 times. This is going to be a recurrent theme in the series simply because this is a Minnesota team that fouls an awful lot. And so if the Grizzlies are going to have any advantage in this series, it won't be at the three-point line. It'll be at the free throw line. But the Grizzlies can't be outscored so drastically from the three-point line. You can't shoot enough free throws to make up for all that. And then the Grizzlies ended up, for the game, not shooting well from the free throw line at all. After one quarter, it's 41-33. Minnesota the lead. Grizzlies make some inroads in the second quarter, and they do it primarily because Minnesota caught the turnover bug. Minnesota, this is remarkable. 11 turnovers in the second quarter, leading to 15 Memphis points. Memphis scored 29 points in the second quarter, and 15 of them were off of Minnesota turnovers. Okay, really, really hard to believe. Towns had 3 turnovers in the first half. So the Grizzlies pull within 3 at 65-62. You look at the score sheet at this time. The Grizzlies are shooting 18% from 3 and 67% from the free throw line. The fact that they are within 3 is a minor miracle, honestly, at this point. Third quarter, Timberwolves, anytime the Grizzlies put up a charge, and it was a big third quarter for Dylan Brooks. He had a dozen in the period. Anthony Edwards responded with a dozen of his own. Karl-Anthony Towns responded with 9 in the third quarter. Through three quarters, he had a double-double, 24 and 11. And through three quarters, Anthony Edwards with 31 points. Morant had 25 through three quarters, but the Grizzlies are down 5 heading into the fourth quarter. Grizzlies would try to mount a rally in the fourth quarter, but Minnesota made 5 more threes in the period. They would end up making 16 threes for the game, plus 9 in three-point makes. And the Grizzlies decided to edge at the free throw line, but shot just 75%, 32 of 43. The big story in this one, as far as I'm concerned, Grizzlies got dominated on the glass. A very, very rare occurrence. No one out-rebounded their foe more than the Memphis Grizzlies this season. Nobody out-rebounded their foe by double digits more than anybody than the Memphis Grizzlies. They were minus 11 on the glass. Steven Adams had 3 rebounds for the game. Brandon Clark had 12 for the Grizzlies. No starter had more than 4 rebounds. Part of that is Jaren Jackson Jr., foul problems most of the game, did set a new franchise record with 7 block shots, a Grizzlies postseason record. But you had Anthony Edwards with 36, Karl Anthony Towns with 29 and 13 and 2 block shots. Big issue for the Grizzlies, could not track down Malik Beasley. Beasley with 8 of his 23 in the fourth quarter. He had 4 of the 16 threes for Minnesota. Minnesota shoots an even 50% from the floor, 39% from 3, and 89% from the free throw line. And that made up for the fact that they turned it over 18 times. But they only turned it over 4 times in that fourth quarter after the 11 turnover second quarter. Bottom line, Minnesota takes game 1, 130 to 117. John Morant finished with 32 points and 8 assists. Really good game for him. One of his best games, perhaps his best game against Minnesota this year. Dylan Brooks with 24. But the issue is Grizzlies got limited production from the bench. 2 from DeAnthony Melton, 5 from Kyle Anderson, 4 from Zaire Williams. Did get 13 and 12 boards from Brandon Clark. But Grizzlies fall in game 1. They will try to even the series at 1 apiece when they hit the floor on Tuesday night. And that was the week that was. We get to some Petey's points right now. Number 1, disappointed that the Grizzlies lost game 1. Not totally surprised. I think that if you were being completely honest with yourself, you knew that this would be a tough matchup. Grizzlies don't have anybody to match up with Karl Anthony Towns. Steven Adams is not a good matchup for him. Maybe Jaren is. Maybe Xavier Tillman off the bench might be a matchup for him. There was a lot of concern about D'Angelo Russell. Grizzlies did a very good job against Russell, held him to just 10 points on 2 of 11 shooting. But, you know, and who do you put on Anthony Edwards? Dylan Brooks can't do it all. Dylan Brooks, I thought, did a good job defensively. Desmond Bane did a good job defensively, but it simply was not good enough on a team-wide basis for the Grizzlies to get a win in game 1. Petey's point number 2, I really thought that this Grizzlies team came out probably too amped up, too excited, too eager to hit the floor. Missed some shots early that normally they would make. Meanwhile, Anthony Edwards was very comfortable and was making shots early. That was, to me, as big a piece of this as anything. Minnesota was never uncomfortable offensively. Grizzlies never put them in a position of discomfort when Minnesota had the basketball. For that reason, Minnesota felt like they were playing with house money all afternoon long. And so, and the Grizzlies, then you miss some shots early. You are very emotionalized early. Jaren gets in foul trouble, and it just started to mount. And even though the Grizzlies had a lead in the third quarter, it never felt really secure. And Minnesota, they just felt like they were in control of this ball game, really from start to finish. Regardless of what it said on the scoreboard, they pretty much had their way in this one. And last Petey's point I'm going to get to here, as far as game 1 is concerned, Memphis has to adjust their thinking. For so long, they have been the underdog and playing with a chip on their shoulder because they were the underdog. Now they're not playing with that chip on the shoulder because they're an underdog, because they're not. They're favored. Virtually everybody in the NBA figured that Memphis is going to win this series. They may still win this series. I mean, after all, remember, last year the Grizzlies as an 8 seed going to Utah, win game 1, and then Utah wins the next 4. Could that happen again? It could happen again. But again, Minnesota is a tough matchup for the Grizzlies. Make no mistake about it. And this is going to be, I've said it before, I thought that this would be a 7-game series, and I thought Memphis would win it because of home court advantage. We'll see if that is still the case. Minnesota now is playing with the chip on their shoulder that they have been disrespected, that they are a much better basketball team than people are giving them credit for. And so now they're playing with a chip on their shoulder for being an underdog. So the Grizzlies have to find their motivation as no longer being the underdog, but actually being the favorite. And they have to figure out a way to create that energy without getting too amped up, as I thought they were in the first quarter of this ball game, because they are no longer an underdog. They can't play with that chip on their shoulder. The chip that they have to play with is, this group hasn't won a playoff series yet. They need to do that. They need to take that next step. They need to win a playoff series. All right, let's get to a couple of other Petey's points about game ones around the NBA. Boston and Brooklyn could be a classic series. I hope it's a seven-game series, and I hope every game is as good as game one. Both teams had control of the scoreboard. Remarkable performances by a number of players. And Boston wins by one on a Tatum layup at the horn. Obviously, a lot was made of Kyrie Irving and flipping the bird to fans. Kyrie Irving saying in the post-game media conference that there were a lot of vulgar names directed at him by Boston fans. Boston fans not happy with the fact that he was once a Celtic and then ended up elsewhere. Look, I get it. As a professional athlete, as a person, you do not want to be disrespected by other people. And it's really hard. I understand for a professional athlete to, you know, be called these names, and then how do you deal with this? And I'm just not sure that obscene gestures is the right way to deal with it. And I will be interested to see how the NBA will respond with this. The NBA does put little placards on the courtside seats about the NBA fan code of conduct. There is security in the building, but security is not going to stop individual people from shouting things at players. Unless Boston security's got to be a little bit more on point about this. I don't know if somebody heard it, turned a deaf ear to it. Don't know. I'll be intrigued to see what the NBA does as far as discipline for Kyrie Irving for the obscene gestures back to the fans. The NBA has always been very protective of fans. So I, like I said, I'll be very interested to see where the NBA comes down on this. And I would imagine that there's going to be some investigation of the fans. You know, where were they? What seats did they have when they were harassing Kyrie Irving? And we'll see what comes of it. I think there's responsibility on both parties, both players and fans, to just be better, to just be more civil. Look, it's a game. I know if you're a Boston Celtics fan, you do not like what Kyrie Irving did. You don't want his team to win. You want the Celtics to win. Get that. Totally. 100%. But there's got to be a better way. Cheer for your guys. You want to boo? Fine. Name calling when it becomes profane. Come on. Stop. Let's everybody just be better. Can we just all agree to be better and more civil human beings? That'd be a great start. That'd be a great start. Okay. Off the soapbox here. Philadelphia, Tyrese Maxey, 38 points as Philadelphia gets the win over Toronto. Look, I'd have Tyrese Maxey as my most improved player of the year. Not a finalist. Big reason why is he was playing 15 minutes a game last year because he was playing behind Ben Simmons. This year he's been a full-time starter, averaging 35 minutes a game. He has been fantastic. So 38 points, and they really tried to get him 40 in the game against Toronto. Didn't quite work out. But great player, fantastic. To me, like I said, most improved, but maybe it's simply because he had more minutes. I don't know. Chris Paul for Phoenix, remarkable. Reggie Miller made a great point during the TNT telecast. He said, look, nobody reads the room better than Chris Paul. Chris Paul knew that New Orleans was making a run and did a fantastic job of making sure that he handled business. Made three threes in short order. Chris Paul, not known as a great three-point shooter, knew what his team needed. He felt they were a little flat. So took over in the fourth quarter. Phoenix goes on to win. Good job by Willie Green and the Pelicans, though. Great fight, even though CJ McCollum got off to a really, really rough start. Could be an entertaining series, maybe a gentleman's sweep. would be nice to see New Orleans at least get a game in this series. It's a good story. Of course, Willie Green, in case you didn't know, was on Monty Williams' bench in Phoenix for a couple of years before taking the job in New Orleans. I want to get to the NBA postseason awards as part of Petey's points before we get to Kyle Radke, our friend of the program today from the 10,000 Layups podcast. But first, I want to tell everybody that today's show is being presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. The NBA playoffs means next-level basketball, and you can get in on the first-round action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet $5 on any team to win and get $150 in free bets instantly. You win no matter what. All DraftKings Sportsbook customers can also bet on NBA hoops with same-game parlays. Combine multiple bets from the same game for a bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. Plus, each day of the first round, you get a risk-free bet up to $10 if the same-game parlay doesn't hit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN. Bet $5 on any NBA team to win their game during the first round of the playoffs, and you get $150 in free bets instantly. That's promo code TBPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. That's in Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, or Wyoming. In Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In Colorado or New Hampshire, 1-800-522-4700. In Connecticut, it's 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat. In Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. In Louisiana, 1-877-770-STOP. In New York, 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or you can also text HOPE-NY. In Oregon, visit opgr.org. In Tennessee, call the Tennessee Red Line, or you can text them at 800-889-9789. And in Virginia, call 1-888-532-3500. You must be 21 or older, 18 or older in Wyoming. You must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Louisiana, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. All right, let's wrap up Petey's points here with our awards. Defensive Player of the Year, Jaren Jackson Jr. is not a finalist. Best Defensive Player on the best defensive team in the NBA, Marcus Smart of the Boston Celtics. I think that's pretty easy. Coach of the Year, I know a lot of people want to give it to Monty Williams. Has done a remarkable job. More wins, franchise record in wins, favorites to win the NBA title. I'm biased. I like Taylor Jenkins. I think the job that he has done with all that this team went through with COVID and injuries, the absence of Morant, all of that, and still second most wins in the NBA, certainly outpacing anybody's expectations for this year. So my vote, if I had one, which I don't, would go to Taylor Jenkins for Coach of the Year. Sixth man, I'm going Tyler Hero of Miami. I don't think there's a better six-man scorer in the NBA. Can change a game when he checks into the game. To me, that's a no-doubter. Rookie of the Year, this is one that is really going to be debated quite a bit. Scotty Barnes from Toronto's had a great year. Cade Cunningham with Detroit played very, very well. But when you look at the ascendancy of the Cleveland Cavaliers, I think the fact that Evan Mobley is on their team was a huge factor why they were able to be as good as they were this year. So I'm going Evan Mobley. Most improved player, frankly, I was surprised to see that Ja Morant was in the top three. I understand he won't be in the MVP conversation because the Grizzlies had such a great record without him. DeJounte Murray, really, really tough. The hometown vote says Ja Morant. Part of me wants to go DeJounte Murray because he is the big reason why San Antonio even got to the play-in game. Didn't advance, of course, but he's been fantastic. I'd split this vote, honestly. Ja Morant, DeJounte Murray. Most valuable player. To me, this is a no-doubter. It's Nikola Jokic. Look, I know Embiid has put up remarkable numbers without Ben Simmons there, but he's had a better supporting cast than Jokic has had in Denver. The fact that Denver made the top six in the West without Jamal Murray, without Michael Porter Jr. and the numbers that Jokic is putting up, to me, that is the epitome of value, to keep your team afloat and pacing ahead, even though you're missing some of your very best players. So that's why I give it to Jokic. Giannis could win this thing every single year because he stuffs the stat sheet at a record-breaking pace. I'm going to go Jokic, back-to-back MVP. And that does it for PD's Points for today's show. Let's get to our friend of the program, Kyle Radke, host of the 10,000 Layups podcast, which can be found right here on the Basketball Podcast.
Kyle, as we visit, we have not had game one yet. So by the time this drops, there will be a game. So either Minnesota will have stolen home court advantage or the Grizzlies will have held serve. We've talked on your podcast, 10,000 Layups, which I love the name, by the way, playing off the 10,000 Lakes theme. We both feel it's going to be a long series. You've heard my reasons why. Tell us why you think this is going to be a long series.
Yeah, I just think that the competitiveness with the younger guys, when you bring in certainly from the Grizzlies aspect, you get Ja and you get Desmond Bane, and you get there's so many guys. But then you look at that Wolves roster too, and you see Towns and you see Russell and you see Vanderbilt and you certainly see Anthony Edwards. It just seems like there's and the Wolves have done a pretty nice job of this all year of not really backing down to any challenge. Most notably, I think a few weeks ago was the Suns game, and the Suns ended up pulling away like late in the game. But it was super chippy. And midway through the third quarter, I think the Wolves were winning. So, I just think that you look like blow for blow for what these teams can do. And then, you just run down the list of all the guys and you're like, oh my gosh, like there's so many players that could, play huge parts in this. And then you look and you kind of match up the guys. I think like certainly numbers, you can look at 3-point percentages and what teams do well and what teams don't in the playoffs. I'm not sure, necessarily how relevant that is. I think it's like how many playoff guys do you have on your team? And I think both teams, like certainly the Grizzlies, you can look at the roster and you see 10 guys that you're like, oh, these are all playoff guys. I think the same can be said about the Wolves. Like you look at that bench and you see, Pat Beverly, you see someone like Jalen Noel, Jordan McLaughlin, guys that didn't get much of a run in the playing game, but guys that you could be like, oh yeah, they scored 12 points in a big win. Like I could see all of that happening. So there's just so many scenarios where seeing like a 4 or 5 game series just doesn't really seem feasible.
Gotcha. Pat Beverly, the impact that he has on this basketball team, because the Grizzlies, of course, had the great rivalry with the Clippers and Pat Beverly was a piece of that. What has he meant to this basketball team? Because some people who don't follow the NBA really closely, when he signed the extension, they were scratching their heads. And I know Brevin Knight and I said, well, now this is a really good move by Minnesota. So what do some people not understand about Pat Beverly and what he means to this Timberwolves franchise?
Yeah, I mean, I was in that camp when the Wolves made the trade in the offseason. I was like, why are we doing this? Like, this just doesn't seem like it fits. And then within a month, you're like, oh, I couldn't have been more wrong. I think he brings a lot of what Jimmy Butler was supposed to bring to the Timberwolves. And at the time, I don't know if like, Karl Anthony Towns or the young guys just weren't ready for someone like Jimmy. But Pat Beverly brings like that same sort of tenacity and like accountability, which I think is huge for this team, because that's something that's been missing. He's a good basketball player too. He can hit shots and he runs the court and he rebounds and everything else. But I think honestly the biggest thing for the Wolves is having a leader and having an adult in the room, and someone who's been in big games, because on their roster they don't have that. You look at Towns and you look at Edwards and you look at Russell. The amount of big games those guys have been in is pretty small. And you have Beverly, who's been around the league and, he's certainly notorious for some of the things that he does. And, you don't have to agree with all of it, but I think he's been absolutely huge for the team. Just in the locker room sense.
How big a bounce emotionally did that play in win? And not just the fact that you won the 7 seed by beating a good Clippers team that did have Paul George and Norman Powell on the floor, but to come from behind and to have that amazing fourth quarter, how much momentum does that give Minnesota? How much belief does that give them heading into the series?
Yeah, I think it's huge. it's hard to, you know, pinpoint, you know, the momentum and whatnot. But I, you know, I just look at the inverse. If the Wolves lose that game, even if it's a super close game and they come back and they lose by one, just knowing this franchise and knowing the fan base and like the game tonight, if, you know, if they had to play the Pelicans on, we're recording this on a Friday, but like, that would be really hard. That you know, like I maybe the Wolves win, but I don't know if it would be the most inspiring win. And then I think you get swept by the Suns. So I hate to say like, oh, you know, if they don't beat the Clippers, everything changes. But like, truly, I think being at the game at Target Center and hopefully throughout the series, Grizzlies fans will get to kind of know Timberwolves fans and where they're coming from and the pain we felt. But like that series or that game rather, it was, somebody asked me how it was for 3.5 quarters. It was like painful energy. Cause it was just like this nervous energy.
Yes.
And then like finally in the fourth, you're like, wait, we could win, you know? Yeah. So, momentum, hopefully, more than anything, I hope that the emotions from that game don't carry over too much and they can focus in on the series.
Coaching has, I don't want to say it's always been an issue since Flip Saunders has left, but Tom Thibodeau, he's got a shelf life. And I love Thibs, but he's got a shelf life. And his shelf life may be expiring in New York even as we speak. Ryan Saunders, I rooted for Ryan Saunders because I didn't know Ryan real well. I knew his dad, loved his dad. And then Chris Finch comes in. And I think, to again, the casual NBA fan, who in the world is Chris Finch? I mean, great G League pedigree, okay, with Rio Grande Valley. But what has he brought to this team? Because again, and we talked about this on your podcast, 10,000 Laps on the Hoops Pod Network. We talked about there's been the greatest jump in winning percentage last year to this by Minnesota, and that has happened under Chris Finch's tenure. What has he done so well with this team?
Yeah, I mean, schemes, certainly. Like, he knows basketball, and I think that's huge from everywhere he's been. But it's honestly a little bit of that Pat Beverly, not in the sense of his attitude, because those two couldn't be more different, but the sense of having someone who's been around and someone who's been a leader and someone who has experience in places. And I think he instantly came into a really tough situation because he got hired on a weekend where like the Raptors, I think, were in town on Friday. The Wolves were in New York on a Sunday. They fired Ryan Saunders, you know, and then they hired Chris Finch the next day. And, you know, there was basically like, yep, they did the interview over the weekend when Finch was in Minnesota, and they didn't interview anyone else. And people, I think internally, David Vanderpool was a name that, so like just that first week was, well, like that, what a bad situation to walk into midseason. But I think instantly he was able to, you know, get past that with the players and then their respect immediately. And I think he has backed the players every step this year. In our podcast, you mentioned Taylor Jenkins, just everyone in the organization, he feels for them on a personal level. Like, you know, you're a basketball player and we're here to win, but also like you're human. And I think Chris Finch has really done that too. He was asked earlier this year about the Wolves getting into a game with the Lakers rather. And it got a little chippy towards the end, and he was like, you know, I want our guys to be our guys, you know, and I'll back them, you know, every step of the way. And whether he believes that all the time, you know, you don't necessarily have to, but saying those right things publicly, I think, is big. You know, when you talked about the past coaches, and I think just getting out of the, you know, the Glenn Taylor rotation of like the normal guys that were here. And like, you know, I love Ryan Saunders. Like, he was a friend of mine when we were with the team, and like the timing for him couldn't have been worse either. It was a team that Gerson Rosas clearly wanted to tear down before he built it up. And when you're a young coach, part of that, you know, that's just not great. So I think for Finch, it's the experience, and it's the respect that he's able to get from others. And then like, he is a really good coach, and he's able to put the team in good situations.
Fill in the blank time. Minnesota will win this series if
Karl Anthony Towns shows up. You know, we saw the Clippers game. He did not. And, you know, if you're a Wolves fan, it's now been 6 big games, and you're all NBA center just really hasn't shown up. And you know, is it fair to criticize someone over a 6 game sample size? I don't know, but we're going to have more of a sample size after this series.
Okay. I'm going to ask one more fill in the blank. Best place for walleye in the Twin Cities.
Best place for walleye. That's a pretty good question. I guess, you know, so for me, I'm a fish fry guy myself. So I will just, I have a little, you know, just a little fryer that I'll bring out back. And my dad goes fishing. He's a construction worker. So in the winter, when he gets laid off, he's about as happy as anyone can be, because he'll just go fishing for 3 straight months. And then, you know, our freezer is full of walleye.
Okay.
So that's great. And I can't cook it in the kitchen, so I'm out back. So if anybody's in Minneapolis in the summer and they want walleye, come on over. otherwise, we can go out somewhere together. I'll look up some restaurants, but I would say just my house.
Ah, okay. Okay. Well, good to know. Yeah. My sister lives in St. Paul, and I don't know if you know this, Kyle. I'm from Wisconsin. Okay.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
So it's perch rather than walleye, but walleye is also on the menu. We've become very fond of the Loon Cafe.
The Loon's great.
Yeah, just down the street. And my sister will take me to the Tavern on Grand in St. Paul. So those are my two spots for getting walleye. Final question for you, and you just mentioned it. We're talking with Kyle Ratke of 10,000 Laps Podcast on the Basketball Podcast Network as we get ready to continue our preview of the Grizzlies-Timberwolves series. You had mentioned that you'd worked for the team. You worked on the digital side. Have you noticed that some teams' digital presence has become a little snarkier, a little chippier? Is that a trend in social media right now with these team accounts? And is that a good thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. So yeah, it's funny, because when I started with the Wolves, it was 2012, 2013. And I remember like opening the team's first Twitter account, and it was like, what's this Twitter thing? Right. And then I think you start to get teams to kind of like flex on each other in ways that I agree, like not always like the nicest ways. So yes, I do notice it. I think basketball fans in general, and like, just, this is probably like a bigger society like topic that we could do a deep dive on, but like people on Twitter, generally, when you don't have a face or, you know, somebody real behind it that you know, can be held accountable. I think in general, people are just kind of mean on Twitter. And I think that has gone to the team accounts too, where they're probably seeing all these responses and like these poor, you know, whoever's managing the account are probably seeing a bunch of things that probably make them mad. And then they tweet out something that they regret, but no, I have seen it. I miss the days of, you know, highlights. And now it seems just, but I also don't want to be like the get off my lawn old guy either. So I get it. But like social in general, like you talk about the NBA and how it's grown. It's one of those sports where like, you don't have to watch a single game to know what's going on, which I think is like probably the best thing about the sport is, you know, you can go on Twitter and be like, oh my God, did you see that game John Moran had last night? Let's look at all these takes on Twitter about his game, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, social has just exploded in ways that is remarkable. I don't know if you saw the clip, but when John Morant came back from injury, Brevin Knight and I had been joking on the air about the ice that he was wearing, you know, the diamond jewelry. And so when Ja came back, Brevin bought me a necklace, not real diamonds, of course. And he bought bling for the entire team. And he surprised me with it at the broadcast table. Well, that clip, and our game was on NBA TV that night, and that might have had something to do with it, but the NBA posts it. The video of him putting this faux diamond necklace on my neck got over 1 million views.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's just, and you know, some of the highlights, the Morant 52-point game, I think there was something like 50-some million views of those highlights. And you're absolutely right. Some people criticize me. It's like, well, why are you on Twitter all the time? It's because it's how I get informed, you know, in some fashion about what's going on,
yeah,
in the NBA. But you're absolutely right too. I think the lack of accountability, you know, unless you're somebody like me with a blue check mark and there's a name, but of course, you know, I think it's the best advice. Just don't read the mentions. However, if you are a team social coordinator, you have to read.
Yeah.
Well, you have to read them.
It's hard too, because you're in a tough spot when you do have the check mark and people maybe aren't being nice to you, because those people can be mean to you, but if you can't be mean to them, because then it's a story. So yeah,
exactly.
It's tough.
All right, Kyle, tell us where we can follow you on Twitter, and also tell us about the 10,000 Labs podcast and what you got cooking.
Yeah. Twitter, Kyle_Ratke. Follow me. Normally just basketball talk. And then Yeah, 10,000 Layups podcast. Julian Andrews and I, we had a podcast together with the Timberwolves. We have it now with the Hoops Podcast Network. So it's been really fun. And we don't work for, you know, we love the team. We love everyone that works there. We don't work there anymore, so we can say a little bit more than what we used to. So it's been a lot of fun, especially this season.
Yeah, Kyle, it's been a lot of fun having you. And when we come to Minneapolis for games 3 and 4, come by and say hello.
I will do so.
So thanks to Kyle Radke for appearing on the show today as our friend of the program. Thanks to Hoop City Basketball Club and DraftKings Sportsbook for their continued support of the Grizz Weekly Grind. And a special thank you to all of you who endured my ratty vocal cords for the last half hour or so. Hopefully they'll be better in time for game 2. This has been the Grizz Weekly Grind, a proud affiliate of the Basketball Podcast Network. I'm Pete Pranica. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time.